What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Hey everyone, just one question this week, and that comes by email from Mike in Las Vegas. I saw Bloody Disgusting post that June 6th is Robert England Day. Happy 76th birthday, Robert. Speaking of which, yes, happy 76th birthday, Robert. I know it's belated at this point when you're listening to this, since his birthday was yesterday, if you're listening to this on Wednesday. So, I was wondering, what are your favorite Robert England roles that weren't Freddy-related? And what is your favorite Freddy kill? And I think we're going to have to do a top three on that one, because that is really pigeonholing us. Yeah. Love your podcast. Thanks. Well, thanks, Mike.
Oh, Mike.
So curious to see how much overlap we have on our favorite kills. I'll go ahead and start because I have an answer.
Okay.
And that's what I do.
Okay.
So my favorite Robert England non-Freddy role is arguably one of his more obscure, I think, and not as long running as I thought it was. And it was when he played the character Blackie in Nightmare Cafe.
Oh, I've always wanted to see that. I haven't seen it.
It is on YouTube, I found. It's very of its time. Mm-hmm. It was only 6 episodes. I felt like it was a lot more. As far as I could tell, it was really well received. People just, I don't think they quite got what it was, and they just weren't tuning in to watch it. But the basic premise was two souls find their way to this cafe, this magical cafe that can kind of teleport people any time or place. Kind of the best way to think of it is kind of like it's almost Freddy's Nightmare-ish, mm-hmm. in the way that it's kind of creating a story within the overarching story. But it's a more well-crafted story with character development that actually kind of ties together. Freddy's Nightmare, for those of you who have been watching it on the Screenbox, it goes off the rails a little bit. There's a lot of episodes, but some of those were some interesting episodes. But I love Nightmare Cafe. Like, it really got me into Robert England outside. I think I might have got into that before I got into Freddy.
Wow.
Because I think I watched this when it was originally on television. So this was kind of my gateway. Wow, I never thought about that. We're really unraveling the layers of John this episode, really early on.
Look at you, Onion.
Yeah. And then my top, well, we'll start there. Let's go around with that first. So favorite non-Freddy role for Robert. How about you, Megan?
Gosh. I think I'm going to do this one just because there was two that I had in mind, but one of them is from fleeting memories as a child, from reruns of V when he played Willie.
Ah. So, I thought about V too.
Yeah, right. But because it's been so long ago and my memories are a bit rusty on that show, I have to go with Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon,
where he plays. Love that movie.
I love the movie Doc. So much. And I do love his little ode to Donald Pleasance as Doc Halloran, the Ahab. And I feel like that's a little bit against type for him because he's so usually like the red herring or the villain. So it was just nice to see him be that kind of Dr. Loomis type.
And side note to Tubi and all the other streaming services, get it back.
I know.
It amazes me that it is not on a streaming service right
Trust
now.
Trust me, I looked.
I look almost on a weekly basis. And yeah. It's been off for a while and it's
yeah.
Sad.
I mean, I own it, but it's like when I'm doing streaming picks,
yeah.
I would like it to be there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally. How about you, Zena?
Okay, this was a hard one because there's one that I desperately want to say, but I feel like I always talk about this movie all the time. That's Wishmaster, because you know I love genies. But instead,
I thought Wishmaster and you at the same time.
Yeah, but I'm gonna go with something new-ish, kind of new, and I'm gonna go with Uncle Grandpa from 2017. He on Cartoon Network, the cartoon. He did the voice of the Boogeyman, and it's so cool. You know, it's just like that's like the children's. You know, gateway.
Love that.
You know, to Robert Englund.
Oh, your pick brings me joy.
Now, top three Freddy kills.
Oh man,
this was tough. I'm gonna start with the original from Nightmare on Elm Street, but not. It was a coin flip between two. It was really tough, but I'm picking Johnny Depp's death when he gets pulled into the bed. Because it's almost against the other kills that happen in the series. Like, it's not really drawn out. It's not, it's not like a mockery like the later versions where he's just messing with people. He's literally pulled into the waterbed and it just explodes blood. It's an amazing visual that just totally works. My second one is the original kill that I first remember seeing from Nightmare on Elm Street that messed me up so bad, and it's the marionette kill from Dream Warriors.
It's on my list.
Yeah, that was
Oh my god, it is so. I mean, if you really even think about it, in terms of all horror movie kills and slasher kills, that has to be one of the most original kills that anyone has ever thought of.
Yeah,
and this was back in the 80s. It's just like, what? You're suddenly going to play marionette with a kid's veins and then drop him off a building? Like that with a big superimposed Puppet Master Freddy? Amazing. Love it. It traumatized the hell out of me when I was like 13.
Oh my God. Real quick. I'm sorry. This kind of reminds me I was in sixth grade with one of my best friends named Jackie. I'm really sorry if you're listening. We don't talk anymore, but just in case if she does. So one day I invited her over to watch a movie. And I remember she had this thing with her veins. She always felt like somebody was going to snatch her veins out. I don't know. You know? And
what we watched it. What a specific fear. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And we watched it. Poor girl. Oh my gosh. Yeah. She was like cringing. I feel so bad. And I was just, I always think about her when I think about that scene. So sorry, Jackie. Sorry.
Who knew that?
I will apologize for you as well, Jackie. That sounds horrible.
I had no idea that that would play to a very, very hyper specific fear that exists.
Yeah, I don't know where she got that from. It was just the weirdest thing. Like, she didn't like looking at her own, like, you know, her hand, like her veins.
Yeah, did not want to see the veins, huh?
No.
Maybe that was a fear of one of the writers too, which is why it was such a specific kill.
Very true.
And as much as Dream Warriors also has so many great kills, I'm going to go for a really weird wild card pick and go jump to Freddy's Dead and the video game kill.
Oh, yeah.
That is so weird because it made me immediately think about how both the combination, and bear with me for just a second, both the cultural phenomenon of video games and rap music, and that pop culture and like people in general didn't know what to do with it. They knew it was really popular. They didn't know how to do it well. The people who were writing this stuff and coming up with these ideas were probably a little bit old and probably not even have a concept of what's going on with them. So it's like, oh, video games are popular. Oh, Nintendo. Let's get a tie-in by saying feel the power, and a power glove, which is arguably one of the worst inventions from Nintendo that had the best marketing campaign. behind it. And then just this really weird video game kill. It is so bizarre and specific to the time that it's just like, what in the hell were they thinking? And it just made me think of, if you ever watched like VH1's I Love the 80s, anytime you saw some like politician or random celebrity, like, I'm going to have a rap song now. Like, ooh, please don't.
Maybe I'm giving this movie too much credit, but I kind of feel like the whole point, you know, this is Rachel Talalay, who had been on this film franchise for a long time, and she's directing. And I kind of feel like the entire concept is like satirizing Freddy Mania and how he became a pop culture phenomenon, which is why they're cramming in all of these pop culture references of the era, from Nintendo to the like This Is Your Brain on Drugs infomercial, sure, to like everything. Does it work? No, it's an oddball movie, well, but I, you know, like that's kind of what they're doing.
Yeah, and I totally, I get that, and I respect that. It's a problem with cramming it in, mm-hmm, that it's like, let's just figure out a way to satirize all this instead. Like it could have used a little polish, maybe a rewrite, maybe a little bit more,
it's
to the animation
too wacky,
budget.
Yeah,
it's very very wacky. Playing like an Atari controller, and then he just has like a couple of buttons on his glove. You forgot my power glove. Like,
now
really,
you play power.
Exactly. Like, wow, you really got that Nintendo money rolling in. Speaking of which, Nintendo, well, we'll take your money too if you want to give us some. Okay. Xena, how about your top three?
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to start off with Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, because that favorite line, welcome to prime time, you know,
yeah,
it's funny. It's iconic. Even as a kid, when I watched it, I thought it was funny. So I love that. So we already know that Freddy, that he can be fun. He can have like these snappy lines, but obviously he can also be scary. And I remember the first time he ever scared me, which was in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm going to go with Tina's death. Because it's crazy, because it still kind of creeps me out that she's levitating, you know, off the bed, and then she's on the ceiling, and then Rod is just standing. I mean, what else could he do, you know, but just stand there. Then later on, Nancy sees Tina in a bloody body bag at that, getting dragged down the hallway to the boiler room, you know? So it's just like, okay, you know, that's just terrifying. So there's that.
Well, plus there's the technological achievement of it. Like, let's just rotate the room. Yeah. Oh, okay.
That was like, so what? Cool. Like, I think I'm pretty sure that you guys have seen it too, like behind the scenes with one of the Blu-rays, they have that, which is so awesome to check out with that. And then the last one, this one's the favorite. I really love A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dream Mask. Mm-hmm. That one's my favorite of the series. So I'm going to go with the Roach Motel.
Yeah. See, the three that you picked were three that I very easily could have picked. Yeah. I really thought about the Roach because of how disturbing
it's just disgusting. And but you know what, if you like body horror, you should watch this. If you don't like body horror, you should watch this.
Nice. All right, how about you, Megan?
You guys got them all. My list is literally,
oh, we did,
yeah.
Well, it's which ones, tell us.
Tina, yeah. Roach Motel, and the puppet master, Philip the puppet.
That's awesome. That's my
top three, so yeah.
And honestly, like, we could have gone deeper, obviously, like top three. It's hard because there are some, considering all the ways Freddy has killed people.
Yeah.
But there are just those standouts where you're literally watching, like, I remember watching the Roach one, like, where in the hell was that coming from? And all of a sudden, like, this is one of the most brutal things.
Like, oh.
My, if we're going like as a quick runner up, just to differentiate a little bit, 5's Greta, where he literally is feeding her herself to death.
Oh, that one bothered me so.
I didn't know that was even possible.
Gross. Yeah, it was so gross.
Yeah, that's the most disturbing for me. That was the one, like, as much as a marionette scene messed me up when I was young, I remember another kid in school told me about that one. And I think it was on the VHS box art, even, like when she's in the chair with the puffed out cheeks, almost like the eraser head looking face going on.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that and just being like, oh, just, when one frame of a movie can bother you, like, you know, you did something right and they did something right there. Speaking about being disturbed and doing something right, welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, everyone, the podcast where we discuss all the disgusting things we love in the horror world. And to help us discuss the disgusting, you know her as lead movie critic for Bloody Disgusting, horror movie fanatic and journalist Megan Navarro. Hey, Megan.
Hi.
And you know her from your YouTube channel and website, Real Queen of Horror, and her infinite love for the genre, Zena Dixon. Hey, Zena.
Hello.
If you listen... Oh, I'm John. I got so excited to just get into things, I forget that I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
If you're listening to this on a Wednesday when the episode drops, we hope your week's been filled with all the best kinds of horror. And if not, we're going to do a quick round the table for the movies, books, games, or anything else in horror that are making the three of us smile right now. Maybe there'll be things that'll make you smile, too. So, Megan, what's been filling your heart this week?
Well, Screambox has subspecies 5, and I realize it's been a very long time since I've watched any of the subspecies movie, and luckily they have all of them, so I went back and watched the first one. I still haven't seen 5, but I did go back and rewatch the first one. I think the last time I saw it was when my brother and I were little latchkey kids and peddling to the video store and renting full moon movies. And so, yeah, Subspecies was kind of like our favorite series as a kid, which probably says a lot about me, or maybe not. I don't know. Anyways, Subspecies, if you don't know, it's three students who are studying over in Romania. They get caught in a struggle between a good vampire and his evil vampire brother, Radu, in the Transylvanian Mountains. It is an interesting movie because I think I more vividly remember the sequels that had a very different character. Like, because Michelle is the lead protagonist in the franchise, and Radu, like the evil vampire, is the overarching villain in the series. And so it was a different cast. Like, this one, it had a very different actress. And then from 2 on, it was Denise Duff. So this one was like when she had a romance with the good brother, who is out of the equation immediately after the first movie. So it's very interesting to see, like, a very different tone. And it's very inspired by a lot of the classics, a little bit Nosferatu, a little bit Dracula, a lot more moody. So, yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's definitely like, I don't want to say it's a classier full moon joint, because I don't want to make that sound like I'm disparaging full moon, right. But it is like got this weird kind of gothic elegance that's very different. Mm. But yeah, it's fun. If you like full moon and you like vampires, then yeah, it's fun. It's definitely a 1991 movie, and it shows, but that's not a bad thing. And then completely switching gears, I watched Wolf Creek 2. That was released in 2013. It's available on Prime Video. If you are unfamiliar, there's really not much in the way of plot. It's a sequel to 2005's Wolf Creek. And it's a bunch of backpack. Well, not a bunch. It's like 3 backpackers that get caught in the crosshairs of Mick Taylor, who is a pig hunter / serial killer. And he pretty much tortures them. And Wolf Creek 2 decides to up the ante a bit. He's still torturing and killing. The gore is off the charts. They dialed that up. They padded out the body count a bit. And then they just let Mick Taylor, you know, loose, like the actor behind him. They're like, just have fun, be as deranged as possible. And he said, I got this. And he was deranged as possible. So, yeah, I think if you think that Wolf Creek, the first one, is a little too slow, then try Wolf Creek 2, because I was trying to think, I don't want to compare it to, you know, like Terrifier and Terrifier 2 or Night and Day, but it kind of is like that in a little bit, you know, like Wolf Creek I liked, but it is very bleak and grim and slow. This one, I won't say that it's happy. It's still bleak, but they definitely pick up the pace, and they definitely let him get a bit almost cartoonish, over the top. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and TCM 2, I feel like is probably a good way to describe it. But it's just super gory, super bleak, but with a little bit of unhinged serial killer personality to the mix. So there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, I never saw the second one. I think I saw the first one in the theater, and I remember thinking that at the end. Because what's the thing? He calls it like a puppet on a stick or something when he does like the whole spine thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I remember when he did that in the first one, I was like, I'm not ready for this. This is too much for me right now, especially because, like you said, the first one, the pacing is so much slower. And then when it ramps up, you're like, this, I was not prepared to switch gears this quick.
Yeah, the first one, like, really makes you get to know the characters before he tortures them. And this one's like, you already know what to expect. We're going to focus more on him. So, yeah.
Yeah, and don't be fooled with the based on a true story thing. this is only based on the fact that people disappear in the outback.
It's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
Yeah. Not the fact that there was actually a guy that they know of. Or kind of like the strangers. They found bodies. That's it. Like, Hollywood got really excited on that whole based on a true story thing for a while.
I don't know. Like, would have fooled me.
I mean, hey, they could be completely accurate for all I know. I'm not going to be in the outback anytime soon, so I'm safe saying these things.
I would go.
What'd you watch, Zena?
So first thing, I finished the fantasy novel by Stephen King called Fairy Tale. I started reading it. This was in April, and then I slowed down because I didn't want it to end, so I just stopped completely because, you know, what am I going to do without it? But then finally I'm like, come on, it's just still sitting there. So basically this one is about Charlie Reed, a 17-year-old boy who inherits these keys to a place that's very hidden, and there's monsters and there's cool things going on, and there's a battle between good and evil. So if you read Stephen King's books, any of his books, this one is very different from his other books. I don't want to say that it's lighthearted, because there's still some stuff that's kind of dark, but not too much. It seemed like he really cared. Not saying he didn't care about his other characters, but it seemed like he really cared about the character Charlie. So I won't spoil it because it's still pretty new. This 17-year-old boy, Charlie, he has been through so much. He lost his mom at a very young age, and then temporarily he lost his father to alcoholism. And it's really sad to watch because he's just a kid dealing with so much. And even the way his mother died is very tragic. Aww. So yeah, based on the title alone, you know, fairy tales, this one plays a big part in the overall story.
No!
Oh no. Oh my God. It's okay. I'm glad I changed mine. Oh my God. Okay. All right. Should I keep going?
Yeah, you keep going.
Alrighty. Okay. But yeah, so if you like fairy tales, so think like Grimm fairy tales, there's Hansel and Gretel, Something Wicked Come This Way, Rumpelstiltskin, a little bit of Neverending Story. So it's really cool. So again, I really, really, really enjoyed this one. I didn't want it to end.
Aww.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's going to be a movie or a series soon. You know, I didn't want to like look it up because it would just make me sad because I finished the book and what do I have now? You know?
Yeah.
So it's fine. But yeah, I really enjoyed that one. So if you you're looking to read something a little bit whimsical, you could check that out. Then the next thing I checked out the dark thriller, The Occupant from 2020. It's on Netflix. And an unemployed executive is forced to sell his apartment. When he discovers that he still has the keys, he becomes obsessed with the family that now lives there and decides to recover the life he lost at any price. Okay, so this is a real slow burn that really surprised me. I thought that it was going to be, you know, like a thriller, just like, you know, oh, sneaking in, I'm gonna change your shampoo bottles. No, it's very, very dark. So there's this guy named Javier Muniz, and you know, it's unfortunate he lost his job. He used to have like this high paying position. His family's apartment, gorgeous view, so posh and like right. His son attended like this fancy private school. His wife didn't really have to work. And now she comes home smelling like bleach all the time because of her job. His son gets teased and now he has to go to public school. And he was even willing to take like a very, very low entry job, but they didn't want to hire him. They felt like he's, you know, he could do so much more. So then finally he's tired and he gets so tired of it. So he decides to take it in his own hands. And every single time when they move out of that apartment, it breaks his heart, but not in the way that you think. It just kind of reminds him that he's broke, he's broken, and he's frustrated. So because of that, he feels like a failure. And now he just, again, decides to just take it into his own hands, and things get dark. It is a little bit depressing, especially if you're someone where, say, if you were laid off from a job before or fired or whatever the case may be. It, you know, those feelings will come back.
Oh, boy.
But, I mean, yeah, he takes it a little bit too far, clearly. Because at first, again, you do feel sorry for him, you know, and he's really trying. But then after a while, it's just like you don't. He's just not a likable person at all. How he treats his wife, how he treats his son. It's just, it's disgusting. So, but yeah, he stalks the family in this new apartment. It's this guy who has this really high position. His wife is literally perfect. And so is his daughter. And yeah, things just take a really dark turn. So I really enjoyed it. It has like a, again, it is a thriller. But because there is like a stalker element, I'm going to say that it does have that feel, like the horror feel, because it literally, not even trying to sound like cheesy, it gave me chills because you never know who knows what's going on in your life. And the way that he was able to just come in like that, and it was like, it wasn't like in a threatening way. So what are you going to do? You going to call the police? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But still. So, but yeah, especially that ending, the ending. Woo! But yeah, so I checked that out. It's on Netflix. If you want to have like a little thrill, a little rush in your life, I recommend checking that one out.
Nice.
And I feel a little bit weird now because I asked you what you watched and you started with a book. Like I was presupposing that you wouldn't have read anything.
I mean, you know, this is the first time I've ever presented a book to you guys, because normally, which every single time I tell you, I haven't really always had the best of luck. So this is like the first time ever where it's like, yeah, I'm gonna share. Sharing is caring. Aww,
that makes me happy. Yeah.
And as a person with 2 degrees that involve reading, I never talk about books. So I should talk. I'm gonna talk about one too, but not because I'm reading.
Okay.
Because my daughter is.
Aww.
My daughter has just started reading Neil Gaiman's Graveyard book.
Ooh.
Yeah. And which I think is might be a little above where like her age and like horror level because of how it starts out. I remember reading it and being like, holy crap. Like, this is a kid's book. Like, this is starting out intense as hell. But it's a fantastic book. It's Neil Gaiman. I mean, pick up a Neil Gaiman book. It's, yeah. They're all so good.
Yeah.
American Gods is fantastic. What's the Angels one? They did a TV series.
Good Omens.
Is it Good Omens? Saint Good Omens is so good. It's just because classic. Neil Gaiman's got such a great sense of humor, and yeah, go read Neil Gaiman. Graveyard Book. If Graveyard Book's supposed to be YA, honestly, I think adults can read it just fine and still find some scares. So yeah, go read that. But really, what I did was I watched movies. And the first one I watched was 2018's The Farm, a Xena pick, which is available on Tubi. A young couple gets kidnapped and treated like farm animals after stopping at a roadside diner to eat meat. I don't know. That's a weird synopsis, honestly, for this movie. It's not wrong, but it's weird. So why this one, Xena?
Well, I'm sorry that you watched it first. It's because it's gross. And it's very upsetting, but I feel like we all have our battles, John. We all have to experience things sometimes in life. That's why.
Yeah. So this one, I'm not going to watch again.
Yeah.
Because of a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. Mostly, this is the weirdest analogy, and really just go with me. This felt like someone was like, watched a Serbian film, and they're like, yeah, but let's take most of the sexual assault out of it and put it on a farm, because it is like, this is a brutal effing movie.
It is. It's very upsetting.
It is. Like, they were like, okay, how can we make this bad right now? Let's do that. All right. How can we make this worse? Okay. Let's do that. And at the end, you're just like, I just feel gross.
Yeah. And what's so weird, like when I first watched it, and I won't spoil it just in case, but like, you're like rooting clearly for the characters to get out of the position. And every single time that you think like, oh, they're gonna make it. And then something even just worse, it just keeps on happening and happening and stacking and stacking. So it's like, I won't say that I like it, but I just feel like it's an experience.
Yes. Yes. This is one of those movies. This, I will give it that much. Mm-hmm. This is a movie. There is absolutely an audience for this. I'm not besmirching the creators, writers, whatever. They did what they did. They made a movie that's more than I could ever say. And I'm sure that there are people who absolutely love it. It is not my wheelhouse. It is a hard watch. Mm-hmm. Now, there are listeners out there who do like more intense stuff and mm-hmm. they look for more intense stuff. Totally check out The Farm. But it is not, it's not my bag because it's, it pushes it quite a bit. So, yeah. And it's on Tubi.
Tubi.
We love Tubi. And then I watched 2011's Livid, the Megan pick, which was on Shudder. I think it's still on Shudder. The suggestion of a big treasure hidden somewhere inside Mrs. Jessel's once-renowned classical dance academy will become an irresistible lure to a fiendish trap for Lucy and her friends. Which is actually a fantastic synopsis mm-hmm. that doesn't give anything away. So why is this one? Why this one, Megan?
Because it is... up until recently, largely thanks to Shudder, been pretty difficult to watch unless you import it. So I felt like you needed to strike while it was available. And two, it's more to me in the kind of atmospheric tone of like the Deep House that I thought you would appreciate.
Mm. I absolutely did. This, I'm not going to say that this is necessarily like a rotation movie for me, but what I couldn't quite put my finger on what I was watching because I was trying to like think of the tone of it because you watch it and then you pick up on the themes and then you understand what it's actually about and what's going on and all that. But there was a different feel about it that I couldn't quite figure out. And what I realized is that the genre of movie, which I'm not going to give away of what this is about that you find out with a home invasion movie, created as a film version of an interpretive dance because there is so much visual elegance to the way they are specifically shooting this and because of the dance themes themselves and just the interpretations. There's certain moments that are literally like you are, I mean, literally and figuratively in some parts, watching a dance. Mm-hmm. Like it is almost like you are watching. And my wife and I used to love that So You Think You Could Dance show because like my wife used to be a dancer and I couldn't dance if you paid me all the money in the world and I still wouldn't even try. But I get really captivated by people who can control their bodies that way and dance, especially interpretive dance because it is art. It is like their interpretation of the music and the movement. And that's what this movie felt like to me, that you take this tale, we'll say, but almost create like a different flow, like the filmmaker. I mean, I have to assume the filmmaker or the writer has some ties to the dance world because that's what it feels like.
It's the same directors as Inside and Deep House. And I'm not sure if they have any dance connections, Julian Bustillo and Alexandra.
If they don't, I'm impressed as hell because that's how it felt. It felt like a dance horror movie to me, but it's not. Like, that's not the point. Like, that's a theme within it, but I don't know. It felt different than a lot of horror movies that I've ever seen before. I totally understand the visual component tying it to the Deep House for sure. But yeah, there's just something about the flow and maybe even the Deep House. Cause you're also tilting the haunted house on its head.
Yeah.
It's kind of that same concept. Let's take a tale, you know, and just tonally shift it.
There's
like, just to the side.
It's interesting because, you know, horror is not really a huge thing in France. And therefore, I don't think Halloween is either. And this is them doing a Halloween movie, which is not giving any kind of genre away. But the way that they're interpreting Halloween and kind of focusing on like the Will-O-The-Wisp and like the fairy tale. Like to me, it's got the fluidity, like that serene kind of flow of the Deep House, a little bit of the palette too, but it's very much like a horror fairy tale for me.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way to put it as well.
I was always felt like it was kind of like, I won't say the other part. It felt like Don't Breathe, but with, you know what I mean? Because that's a spoiler.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because it's the home invasion aspect of things. And yeah, no, kudos to him. Like normally when I watch any French horror, I'm also expecting it to just be, oh, this is going to get brutal.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it doesn't really. Like, it's horror. It's definitely horror,
yeah.
But it's not trying to go over the top with that. Like, it's more storytelling and visual storytelling in what's going on, with some really disturbing imagery too at the same time. But no, this is another one. It was outside. Like, I'd never heard of it. I would have blown right past it on Shudder, sometimes because I just don't like the navigation on Shudder's dashboard, but that's my thing. But this is a great one. I totally recommend it. And like Megan said, if it's normally not on streaming or it hasn't been on streaming for a while, go check it out now while you got a chance. I don't think you're going to regret it. I think it's a really, really strong movie.
Just for perspective, this is a 2011 movie that did not become available until 2023 or 2022, Yeah.
This is the first time it's been streaming?
It streamed, I think, once before, which must have been last year. And then it was either earlier this year or last year sometime that was the very first time that it was available to watch.
Man, if it was available to be picked up by streaming and streaming services just weren't picking it up, that's a failure. It's like Behind the Mask. What? Get it on streaming.
Yeah, but it never got a VOD release. It never got a DVD / Blu-ray release either. It just was like nothing until like Shudder actually like acquired and streamed it for, and it wasn't even very long. It was like there for a month or two and then off, and then it's back on again. So, you know, that's why I was like, watch it while you can, because who knows? I don't know what the deal is with this movie, but.
Yeah, go check it out for sure. Okay, before we move on, what did we watch and how did we watch it or read?
I watched Subspecies on Screambox. You can watch all of them. If you love Radu and Michelle, go watch them all. And then I also watched Wolf Creek 2, which is on Prime Video.
I read Stephen King's Fairy Tales. I got it from Amazon. And then I watched The Occupant on Netflix.
My daughter is reading Neil Gaiman's Graveyard Book, which she actually got from a teacher who's like, you like scary stuff, right?
Cute.
She wears her creepy podcast shirt to school a lot. She's really proud of. So she's kind of turning into the horror girl already in school.
That's so cool.
And then I watched 2018's The Farm on Tubi and 2011's Livid on Shudder. Watch it while you can. Okay, before we move on, I need stuff to watch. I think Megan's up first.
Okay, well, I'm gonna give you a choice. Do you want a reader, as you put it, or not?
No reader.
Okay, then.
I've had a lot of readers.
You may regret that later, because you're gonna watch Zombievers.
I've already watched Zombievers.
That's such a good movie.
I know, it's the first time in a while. I'll tell you what, the opening sequence with Bill Burr and who I didn't realize was John Mayer until much, much later is still one of my favorite sequences in comedy horror.
Oh, Bill Burr, man. I love him. The movie is so funny.
Okay. I mean, I'll watch it again. I don't mind.
No. If we already assigned this. We need a spreadsheet now and keep track of this.
I know. Yeah, I think we there's probably so do. Many.
Yeah, because there's like a few that I've thought about giving you and I'm like, I'm pretty sure we've done that already. Trying to think of one that we can have you watch that has not been.
Okay, give me the reader then. You can give me the reader. Okay. That's fine.
The Witch Part 1 Subversion, which is also on Shudder.
The Witch Part 1 Subversion.
Mm. Yeah, it's got a crazy title, but it's Korean horror.
I'm sure it sounds beautiful in Korean. It's the American language. It screws it up. All right, Zena.
Do you mind another reader or do you want a break?
Oh, let's do the pay one. You teased the pay one last week.
Oh, yeah, but now I don't know anymore. Well, that's true. I did give you The Farm, so I might as well.
Yeah,
okay, I'll hold off on the reader for now, and let me just see if that movie is still available. Okay, well, first, have you seen this movie called The Hole from 2001?
I don't think so.
Okay. It is available on Prime Video for $6 or on Google Play for $4.
Oh, I might have to go Google Play.
Or on YouTube, but
for
I don't know
$6
the price.
$6? A 2001
which is so,
rental for
I don't know.
Bucks?
That's what it's showing on like Google. But if you have Paramount Plus, you can watch it for free.
I do have Paramount Plus.
Okay, it is on Paramount Plus.
Okay. Saved me. Okay, and quick, before we move on, I do want to let listeners know that there might not be an episode next week, not because we're not going to try recording. Speaking of which, sorry about last week. Memorial Day kind of got on top of us as far as recording was concerned. We are going to try out a new recording method next week. So if there isn't an episode, it's user error that we will correct as quickly as possible. We want to be recording as much as you want us to. So if there isn't an episode next Wednesday, it was a mistake. And we will work it out, but ideally it will be there.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare, features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
That's it. Enough about what we've been watching this week. It's time for Megan to bring us up to speed on the news and trending topics in the world of horror. So what's going on, Megan?
Your favorite clown is coming back. I'm going to say he's your favorite
clown. Pennywise?
No, the other favorite. Ah. The other favorite. Art the Clown. He's officially going to be back. It's official. Terrifier 3 is happening. Director Damien Leone and producer Phil Falcone will return to oversee the continuation of the franchise. I surely hope that Damien Leone would be back, because otherwise, what the heck? No, right? But yeah, no. So he's for sure back. Don't worry. Didn't mean to scare you. A lot is being kept under wraps, obviously. But David Howard Thornton, who plays Art the Clown, and Lauren Lavera, who played his nemesis, Sienna, are among the cast expected to return for the sequel. Filming is expected to get underway in November or December of this year for release in late 2024. Terrifier 3 will be another boundary-pushing addition to the horror genre, continuing the no-holds-barred, uncompromising exploits fans of the franchise have come to expect and celebrate, Damien Leone said. If you thought Art the Clown's Reign of Terror in Part 2 was extreme, you haven't seen anything yet. And this is from the mastermind, the puppet master of art. So if he's saying we haven't seen anything yet, you've got time to prepare, and we're probably going to need all the time to prepare. Adds Priscilla Ross Smith, the founder of Coven, The Coven, who is handling the worldwide sales of Terrifier 3. She said, there will be a much bigger budget this time around, which is intended to give the filmmakers more creative freedom and let them be as wild as they can be. All jokes aside, we're going for that Oscar this year.
Which is awesome. For those of you who don't know, Terrifier 2 was submitted for the Oscars for visual effects. That is not a joke. It absolutely was. And it was actually a really cool pitch that I got a chance to watch the video of. And we missed talking about it, but Fangoria's Chainsaw Awards were last week.
They were a couple
of weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and Terrifier 2 won at least one, two, didn't it?
I feel like it won like 3 to 4.
It was best kill, best.
Do you want me to pull it up?
Some theatrical release.
Chainsaw. I will tell you.
It might have been best. It wasn't best horror movie, or best director was Nope.
Best,
I think the phone won screenplay.
All right, so Screambox had five Chainsaw Awards.
Nice.
So they had...
Oh, they won for It, too,
yeah,
didn't
they? Yeah, It was one of them. So Damien Leone's Terrifier 2 won 4 Chainsaw Awards. Best Limited Release Movie of 2022.
That, okay.
Best Makeup Effects, best kill.
Sure.
And then star Lauren Lavera was the first ever recipient of the Editor's Eyeball Award for her work as Final
That's
Girl
so
Sienna.
Awesome.
So yeah, four.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Four awards. Yeah. So yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I was a little bummed that Deadstream didn't win for best premiere.
There was a few surprising omissions, but at least Terrifier got the recognition it deserved. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, get ready, because man, that sounds like that's gonna be a doozy. Like Damien with a bigger budget for special effects. Whew. And then switching gears to one that is an independent that nobody really knows just yet. Lightball Film Distribution has announced the UK release for sci-fi horror movie The Breach, which will be available on demand and download in the UK and Ireland on July 10th, Australia and New Zealand from July 12th. There is no release date yet for the US, but you can watch the trailer for the UK release online now. This was directed by Rue Morgue magazine founder Rodrigo Gudinho, who previously directed The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee. The Breach tells the story of John Hawkins counting down his last days as chief of police in the tiny town of Lone Crow, nestled deep in the desolate woods of northern Ontario. But when a mangled body with uncanny wounds washes up on the shores of the Porcupine River, what a plucky statement, Porcupine River, he's pulled into a horrific mystery that defies comprehension. Nothing says Lovecraftian terror like the Porcupine River. It just makes me feel like summer camp, which is not this movie. But anyways, I digress. Guns N' Roses legendary guitar hero slash executive produced and co-produced the score. The film is based on the novel by acclaimed horror novelist Nick Cutter. I love Nick Cutter's books. He wrote The Troop. He co-wrote this with Ian Weir. So it's based on a book, and he also co-wrote the screenplay. So yeah, some Lovecraftian horror from a lot of horror names, and it'll come at our way at some point, but UK, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, you get it first. Hooray.
Yay.
Yay. John's like, I got nothing. Yay. Yeah. And then some territory, we're veering back into territory that is familiar. Whatever you do, don't open your eyes. But you should, because it's a movie. A brand new international spinoff movie set in the world of 2018 Netflix hit Bird Box, called Bird Box Barcelona, is going to premiere on Netflix on July 14th. But Bird Box Barcelona, that is a tongue twister a little bit. Anyways, it is not a sequel. It is a sidequel. It is set at the same time as the original movie, just, you know, across the globe. After a mysterious force decimates the world's population by causing all who see it to take their lives, Sebastian and his young daughter Anna must navigate their own journey of survival through the desolate streets of Barcelona. But as they form an uneasy alliance with other survivors and make their way toward a safe haven, a threat more sinister than the unseen creature grows. The first spin-off movie will be a Spanish-language thriller set in Barcelona, obviously, because it's in the title. The Occupant, filmmakers Alex and David Pastor wrote and directed the film. So we love all of this coming together. So yeah, if you're curious, the trailer is available online now.
Just so long as they don't utterly kill my daddy heart like original Bird Box did.
Aww.
I couldn't sleep.
Aww.
That river scene was the saddest. Oh God, I don't want to talk about it. Make me sad.
They're there. I'm
gonna start thinking about art. All right, listeners, your turn. How many people do you think art will kill in Terrifier 3 with a bigger budget? Is there a pluckier location name than the Porcupine River? You can call or text us at 224-475-1040. The number is also in the show notes, or feel free to email us at bedisgustingpodcast@gmail.com. Finally, Xena is going to make all our lives easier in the sea of horror movie options and clue us in what's appearing soon that we should be watching. So, Xena, what should we be watching?
We do have a sea of so many movies, but I kind of cut it down because, you know, boom. I don't know. I was going to sing. All right. Well, first up, on Tuesday, the 6th.
Well, why just stop?
I don't know. Because it's just like, don't you hate it? Like when you're waiting for someone just to get to something and then they want to start talking like what I'm doing right now? Or imagine I was singing a song. Like,
that's basically
imagine?
Just like listening to the radio. So yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
But singing, it's not like I even have like a beat. It's just me in my
but
closet.
We need that because everybody has been missing some Xena razzle dazzle for 2 weeks. True. Okay, so
I'm just really amused that we just keep prolonging this even longer.
Okay, so I'm gonna get to it. Maybe I'll have a song at the end. Well, you have to listen to find out. Okay, so Tuesday the 6th, by the time this comes out, Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, the Robert Englund story, will be finally available on Screenbox. So if you want to check out that documentary, run over there, which is why you should be subscribed to Screenbox at this point. Like, come on. Thank you.
Do it.
Also, we have Pollen. This will be available on VOD. After being assaulted by a senior coworker, a young woman's dream job becomes a living nightmare. She tries to keep her career together while being tormented in her dreams by a mysterious tree monster.
Dun, dun, dun. Sorry,
I know that wasn't supposed to be funny, but
I'm intrigued. So I need to see this tree monster. Also, over on bloodydisgusting.com, Megan created a list, 5 Robert Englund movies to stream for Robert Englund Day, which is tomorrow by the time this comes out, like on Tuesday. But you can still check it out.
Yes.
On Wednesday, you know.
Yeah, it's available. Cool.
Yeah. So A Nightmare on Elm Street, which is available on Screenbox, and then Dead and Buried. It's available on AMC Plus, Peacock, Prime Video, Shudder, Tubi, Vudu. And if you need a little sleaze in your life, Eaten Alive is available on AMC Plus, Night Flight, Peacock, Plex, Shudder, Tubi, Galaxy of Terror. You can just Google this, okay? And then also Jack Brooks, the Monster Slayer.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we're going to go all the way to Friday the 9th. We have The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. It'll be available in theaters. So this movie tells the story of a teen who's on a desperate quest to cure death. Boom, boom, boom. There you go, song. Okay. And then we have the supernatural horror thriller, Brooklyn 45. This will be available on Shudder. Best friends since childhood, 5 military veterans gather to support their troubled host, and the metaphor ghosts of their past become all too literal. And then on Tuesday the 13th, we have The Pope's Exorcist. This will be available on DVD. As the Vatican's leading exorcist investigates the possession of a child, he uncovers a conspiracy the Vatican has tried to keep a secret. So if you missed this in theaters like I did, I feel like I keep mentioning this, and it's also streaming, you'll be able to own it. So yippee-ki-yay. And then The Hunt Club. This will also be available on DVD or Blu-ray. 3 women lured to an island with the chance to win $100,000 in a hunt discover they are being hunted. So that's what we have that's going on. Again, Screenbox is available, as well as Bloody Disgusting TV. Thank you.
Can we put, Yippee-ki-yay, the Xena soundbite over a picture of Russell Crowe as the Pope's exorcist on a Vespa? I feel like it's the perfect sound to accompany that image.
Or him leaning out like a broken window at Nakatomi Plaza, like with a machine gun in his hand.
Yeah, if you want to keep it going, yeah.
Yeah. And that's Bloody Disgusting Podcast for this week, everyone. If you'd like to read more from Megan, you can check out her reviews at bloodydisgusting.com and on Twitter at HauntedMeg. Xena can be found on her own website, realqueenofhorror.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name, or at Lovely Xena on Twitter. And you can hear me on my weekly horror narration podcast, Creepy. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and feel free to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BeDisgustingPod, or drop us an email at BeDisgustingPodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out all things Bloody Disgusting on TikTok, @BeDisgusting. And if our new technology actually works next week, you might see us a little bit on said TikTok.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, for this week, I'm John.
I'm Megan.
I'm Xena.
Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, watch something you love, just make sure it's something bloody. Happy birthday, Robert Englund!
Yeah.